Hello and welcome to Developer Marketing Stories. My name is Matthew Ravel and...
And I'm Adam Duvander, and today we are joined by Katie Penn, who recently left Twitter as the global head of marketing and previously held roles in developer platform at Twitter and Twitch.
And before we get into the conversation with Katie, one of the reasons we're doing this podcast is to share with you about our training and coaching program for developer marketing professionals. It's called Developer Marketing in Practice, and you get a mixture of coaching, learn at your own pace training, and also live sessions with experts in different areas of developer marketing. If you want to find out more, go to developer.marketing.
Great. And now as we get into this conversation with Katie, I think listen for if you are a marketplace or if you are looking to engage developers before you have a product ready, there are stories within her time at both Twitter and Twitch where they really did that in some great ways. So listen for that, and let's get to that conversation with Katie. All right. Welcome, Katie. Can you take us to that moment where at Twitch you realized that a developer audience might be one to focus on?
Well, I was brought in to focus on a developer audience. So it was my remit when I was brought in. I had been at Twitter running developer marketing at the time, and they wanted to build out a platform ecosystem. I think that it evolved while I was there. So originally it was gaming integration. So we were working with gaming companies on integrating their games into Twitch. So there were unique experiences within the stream while the streamers were playing the games. But then we started investing in the platform in a way that would require us to bring in a wider audience of developers. And as we were making that product investment, we realized that there was a big opportunity and challenge because developers probably didn't think of us as a platform for them to build upon.
So was it an organic thing of there were already developers who were live streaming, coding, and similar things?
Not that we knew of, no. But as I built my marketing team, so I was the first hire, and then they wanted me to build out the team. And I brought over someone from Twitter. I usually, in the developer marketing space, and just for transparency, I haven't worked in that for a while, but in the developer marketing space, usually I'll start with, I brought in an advocate to be working in developer marketing. So I brought someone in that had marketing chops that ended up in my team, but had started in the developer advocacy team at Twitter, because a lot of developer marketing is content. And so he was my first hire. And yeah, my remit was to grow that space as we're investing in a platform play, which we eventually launched, which was essentially like an ISV app store where developers could build, we called them extensions, but they're essentially apps for streamers to use in their streams. And there was a monetization share play around that app store. So we had to actually start bringing the developer audience in and making them aware of the API so that when we launched the product, we had some builders that were already familiar enough with the platform that that they'd be interested in participating. And in that process, my first marketer kind of just went through the process of setting up, which is a heavy lift, setting up to be able to stream, to understand the product, not to stream on it. But then as we started to kind of try to pull in a community for the launch, we didn't have a lot of developers that thought of Twitch. And so he and I thought it would be a good idea if maybe he just streamed a little bit to start coding, just one, to see what it was like, but two, to start using it as a platform when we launched. And we're very surprised, where we wanted everyone to come in as an API developer, we were surprised how many actual advocates started coming in for their own platform to start streaming on there. but it didn't hurt us. It was just like a surprise community we weren't actually intentionally going after, which is like the developer relations community.
But it was an intentional way to be able to understand the Twitch audience and recognize that you had to find some way to get developers excited about the Twitch platform.
Absolutely. And the thing that happens is when people start using your product as a consumer, because essentially that's what they were, they become a lot more sticky in terms of wanting to use it and integrate with it. So the good news was we had developer advocates now using it to teach. Well, who was their audience? Their audience was developers. So it was very easy for us to either plug in. So a person on my team would co-host with them and then be able to do a plug for what we were doing in the developer space. And now we had customers or, you know, consumers, not really customers, but consumers listening in on developer advocate channels that also now were like, hey, this is a cool product. And what are they? They're builders. And so then they were probably going to look and be like, oh, there's an API. Oh, I can fool around with it. So it was more of an organic thing that happened, but it definitely served our purpose of one, exposing them to the platform, and two, exciting them about the possibility that it was like a new platform for them to integrate and build upon. And three, having a monetization like play in the beginning where their investment may have returns, which a lot of times it's just like build with us, but there's really nothing that we're actually offering to developers. This was like a pretty cool model where they were going to be able to have a revenue share with streamers.
You know, looking back on it, it was almost a happy accident. Would you say that you learned, well, let me put it a different way. Are you used to having happy accidents in your career, or was this something new that you had to kind of take stock and think about how to change course to take advantage of it?
I'm used to having accidents in my career. I wouldn't dismiss the fact that we had people on the team that had relationships with the developer community. We had all worked in the developer community, so we understood personas and behaviors. And we'd had big launches before. That's why we are hired. So I had been at Twitter before. We had launched Fabric. I had done acquisitions for the developer community. I understood. I had started at Salesforce when the developer relations team was, we were a team of four or five, like we're so small. And so I'd seen it grown up. I'd seen it kind of grow up and understood about, you know, it's funny in the creator space now, everyone talks about authenticity, but like that really started in the developer space. Like there was no fake marketing to developers that was going to land. And we had, you know, I had mentioned this before, like part of the reason that we knew that once we started live streaming and we saw developers engage, that we knew that we had something there is because when we had launched this product called Fabric, which was a mobile SDK at Twitter, we had a big launch event, which is always hard. And I may not recommend it in the future because at Twitch, it ended up quite problematic. There were a lot of lessons learned with like launching the Fabric at like one event, but launching the product to one event, but at Twitter, it worked out well, but it was a difficult event to get developers to sign up for because we didn't have a mobile app developer play at the time. We had an API that was quite restrictive. But what we ended up leaning into based on our experience was at least programming content at that event. Like they knew there was going to be a reveal, but programming content at that event that would resonate with developers, right? So we hadn't launched our product, so we couldn't actually reveal the content around building with the mobile SDK. But we did lean into the open source investment we had made at Twitter and had those individuals that had built that come on stage and, you know, we're able to publish that part of the content. We're able to lean into how Twitter managed, you know, like the size and growth and the data sets. And, you know, what I noticed at the event is like those sessions were like packed, even though they had nothing to do with our product. And they were packed because it's a community and they want to learn how people build their own products. And so I always like weave that into any strategy we had. So whether it's just engineers like writing blog posts about the challenges they have, it may not be the same product, but it's like the same language and the same experiences. And so kind of revealing under the hood helps a lot when you're trying to win the hearts and minds of developers. They want to hear from the developers inside the company that are building that product as well. So it's kind of a strategy that helped where we're like, of course, maybe we should be showing them how we do a Twitch setup and how I stream, you know, on Twitch so that people can just find it more appealing.
And so the common thread I'm seeing there is the product isn't quite ready, but you still need to engage the audience.
Yes. Yes. I mean, you want, from a marketing strategy, you kind of want to not start from zero when you do a launch, right? You don't want to start like, you don't want to start at 1,000 either, but you kind of want to like build that community a bit. At Twitter, I did like, we knew we were going to launch that product. We knew that we had a perception problem because of the API, but we're going after a totally different audience. We had bought Crashlytics. We did mini meetups before we ever launched that project. I did one in Japan. I did one in London. I mean, we were scrappy, but we were doing them so that we could build a bit of an audience for when you launch, because who are you going to like share it with when you launch, right? Like you need people that are somewhat already showing intention and engagement. That's a little bit easier, probably. I'm just based on the way people communicate, but you know, we kind of like invested in the developers before we revealed what we were doing so that we had somewhat of a base.
I want to zero in on one little thing that you said there. You mentioned that there was this API perception at Twitter, and then, but that was okay because it was a different audience. I think a lot of marketers listening to us right now would say, wait, that's a developer audience. How is that a different audience? Developer is a developer, right?
But at the same time, it was a different audience. Because we are offering, you weren't building off of Twitter data what we're offering as a product. It was really an SDK with the foundation of, they ended up selling it to Google, and that audience was able to be portable with Google because what they weren't building were apps on top of the Twitter platform. It was kind of an independent product. Now, perception and trust to use the product that they wouldn't end up kind of, I don't know if I can curse on this podcast, but am I allowed to? I don't know. Screwed by Twitter. We still had that problem. And, you know, like in the end, we apologized. I think the second flight conference I ran, we had Jack at that point and he apologized to developers and then they still sold the product. So, you know, I don't know if that reputation was, I think they maybe forgave us once and was all about Fabric, but once that got sold, I don't know if you could win the trust back twice. I think that like what I would say about the fact that it didn't matter, it did matter, but it was a different investment from the company, right? Like they weren't investing in like, hey, all developers come and build on us. We're going to let you build your own types of Twitter apps on top of our API. It was very much like, hey, we believe in the mobile app ecosystem. We believe we have some tools that would benefit you. We had MoPub, which was sold as well. But like, hey, we're building this SDK because we believe in the mobile app ecosystem. And, you know, we also see mutual benefits for Twitter. It was different than like, hey, you can build your business with the Twitter data. It was a very different.
I agree with you that it's a different type of developer audience. And I think that's one of the keys that we see, especially marketers who are coming to a technical audience for the first time, missing, is that there's just this one audience, but really there's so many ways to,
you know, you have to remember I came from Salesforce developer audience, like completely different than going into mobile app, right? Like it was just so different in the API audience as well, with something where it's when you're building on just one data set, you're very dependent on the health of that company, right? Where this mobile app audience, they're really about the health of their own mobile application that was independent of a platform. So it was more like a product. And when I went back to MoPub, it was the same. I ran marketing for MoPub and we brought in publishers, a lot of game developers, and that was independent too. That was a monetization. They used that product for monetization of their own apps. So you just have to know the intention of your audience and how they would be needing your product and interacting with your product. But there's different as when I work in, you know, I've worked in other marketing spaces, the different customers and audiences you bring in.
What advice would you give to a developer marketer today who's looking to segment a developer audience so that they can target those developers who are most likely to be of strategic value to them?
I mean, there's some basics and one-on-ones of marketing you can apply to the developer audience as well. So if you were going to build out, and I know this is like, you know, people use swear all the time, but like the personas of like who they are, just understanding like there's a difference between an enterprise developer, a mobile app developer, a game developer, right? So those are three that I've worked in. Even within that, you can segment out, say like we're doing mobile app developers, hobbyists. Where do you find your hobbyists? Who are they? Maybe a mobile app developer that is trying to build a business but has a full-time job. So they may be mid-tier. And then you have like the full-time mobile app developer that is working for a company and is, you know, spending all of their time. So you can kind of like segment out even in the personas, like who they are, where they spend their time, what their motivation is, and then which one you want to invest in. Like some of the strategies that we've always had is like, you know, draw a line in the sand and who you're really going after within those segments, and then find like other activities that can serve the other ones. So say that you're going after the mid-tier mobile app developer, maybe you're going after the full-time, like, you know, full-time paid developer. Okay, well, maybe you have to do events and activations that find them and respect their time. Maybe you know that like time is one of their priorities, like immediate, like very clear documentation or whatever it is that you can kind of identify as their priority, and then know that you can kind of like reach beyond that through other activations, right? So maybe we probably weren't going to get the like game audience interested developers on Twitch by only hosting the live stream. So this might be the hobbyists and people listening into other advocates, but that then we had to be at like the certain events and industry moments where we would be able to reach those that are like quite busier, but are able to focus their time or give their time in certain, you know, moments in time. So it's kind of like you build your strategy based on the behavior of the audience that you're after.
Different types of developer have a different role in your strategy. So, so what would that look like if you've identified some developers you want to target, some different types, knowing that someone's a hobbyist and some other things about them, what does that do to influence your strategy?
So knowing that someone's a hobbyist if we were going after like the wider, larger community and the way that that would influence our strategy for hobbyists is probably one, like meet them where they're spending their time. So invest in forums and pushing out a lot of content that can have a wider reach. Ensuring that who they follow are partners. So having a partner strategy so that whoever they're following, you're doing more partnerships around them so that your content can also be like supported through the partners that might have a reach with those hobbyists. Probably working with analysts if you're on the enterprise space so that you're actually there, the hobbyists are going to be able to surface that information and, you know, like your play through publications and things such as that. So it's really just depends on who you're going after. Whereas, you know, I know Slack, it was a lot about partnerships, right? And integration. So they had to go through more of a business slant and going in with their BD teams and getting those like really top integrations first with the trust that like the hobbyists would follow based on what they were seeing. So a lot of times it's like, okay, like showing those bigger wins and knowing the hobbyists are going to pay attention and then come on board.
So knowing who they are tells you, you know, what they want to get out of the relationship or what they want to do generally so then you can insert yourself into their goals, I guess.
The OG days of DevRel is just like, come build. It'll be so much fun. Right? Like that's kind of how it started. And I think it worked out because there weren't a lot of players in the space. And so there were, you know, like when you think of like how many dev meetups there were like 15 years ago, it just wasn't the same. And so it was easier to just say like, come build developers, let's build together. And now the mind share and like the opportunity, it's much more difficult one to penetrate that and two to realize that like, they're not just going, I think that audience isn't just going to build out of like goodwill and intention anymore. So the more you can have a reason for them to, a benefit for them, the more likely you're going to have their attention and interest in trying. And that's where I thought that like Twitch was very smart at having whether the intention for a developer is monetization, right? To be able to make. And there were some developers that actually like made some good money off of the extension launch that we had. If that is their intention, then now you're having an offering there. There were some that were also just big fans of the streamers. So if it's maybe a community intention, then like offer that play. But make sure that there is a reason for them as well as for you. If it's just to benefit your own platform, I think you're going to fail at this point.
What were some of the fun moments, you know, 6 months into Twitch when you had been engaging the developer audience and you realized that there was this community aspect there?
Well, I think that like, especially since the developer audience is a learning audience, it was just really fun to have advocates that maybe had nothing to do with the space we're in, reaching out and wanting to adopt a platform. It was just kind of a convergence of like, my gosh, like my old Salesforce people are writing us asking how to use the platform for their developer advocacy. So it kind of legitimized like just the work in DevRel. And that was really fun, like being invited to the DevRel conference to speak. Like it's kind of sometimes, especially as marketers, we're a little less respected in the DevRel space than maybe in some other spaces. So it was kind of just like this beautiful emergence of a community. And I think that is always quite special when you can help build that on a platform. And it also just like, double down on what made Twitch unique, you know? So it was just, I ended up going into a new role at Twitch because I wanted to expand my remit outside of DevRel because I had done it for so long. And so I went into expanding audiences on Twitch. And went after music and sports, but we also had this kind of, we already had an example, a proof point with the developer space, and that kind of helped support the business case for going after larger audiences. Like the developer space was going to be so big, but we felt like, hey, if we can bring in an audience outside of gaming, and I think the developers came first, we think we can make a big bet in a few audiences that we also think would stick. So like the idea that developers were able to stick was because it had the recipe for their own success. Like live, they could do live coding, they could interact with the community, they could make clips and then share them on other platforms. They were there to teach, right? And so, you know, we ended up going after music, and then we had this convergence where the pandemic hit, and it was like, hey, like, let's launch the music space, but let's do a fundraiser. So we did Stream Aid, and we were able to like build an experience and an audience for a moment in time, but could also then once again be a proof point for musicians to come onto the platform. I think that like today there's like 15,000 DJs that live stream on Twitch. So it's a new audience we could go after again.
So you mentioned, you know, those extensions or apps that people could build for Twitch streamers to use. Then obviously there's the monetization side of things for people doing the actual live code streams themselves. But what were some of the metrics that you used to track whether this new audience was healthy and growing for Twitch?
There's a few metrics. I mean, there were two different audiences at that point. There was the DevRel community on Twitch, and that was just that wasn't part of our business goals. So it was something that we're able to watch and follow, but we actually weren't tracking. It may have ended up in the DevRel team's goals, but I don't think it definitely didn't start there. And that was just like, you could just track the health of how many live streams about developer topics were happening on the platform, how many new users were coming on that identified themselves as developers. You know, the other magic was that we already had developers that were using the platform to watch gamers, because you have to like think of the audience demographic there. Like Twitch resonated, and the majority of their audience were men between the ages of like 18 and 26. And so often, like a lot of, you know, I don't know what the makeup is today of developers, but we knew we already had a community of developers. They were just watching different content. So it was easy. It was easier for them to move over to start watching developer content on a live stream as well. But in terms of the metrics around the launch of the extension, you know, the ISV platform, it was really about how many extensions were being built. And then, you know, of course, API calls as well, like starting kind of from the basics, people coming to the site, people reading the docs, and then people integrating with the API, and then like how many actual extensions were being shipped. And then the final metric was really around like how many of those extensions were being used by the streamers, right? So you had two audiences. We also needed adoption from the creators on the platform that would integrate some of those extensions. And we had a couple extensions that were quite viral and popular, and then some that didn't work, right? So there was a trust and investment from the developers that wanted to play with it and build on it. But there were a few that made, I mean, gosh, I wish I should have done the research before this, but there were a couple that made them overnight heroes, and we had them on stage. We ended up doing developer conferences, which Twitch had never done, in conjunction with TwitchCons. The CEO led them. He was there. Amit Shear, like, you know, I think that was the moment where like, wow, we really built something here that was unique and different to an audience that was solely focused on gamers. Now we're having our own developer DevRel conference. We went, you know, we did some international trips around it, bringing in more audiences. It was really fun. Gosh, you guys are making me miss. You're making me miss Step Ralph, and I'll go back into it.
Well, I mean, is there anything you look back on now and, you know, wish you'd done it differently?
I would say that the Twitter experience was probably the hardest because I don't know if I would have had such a conviction on the fact, like, you know, we write the scripts and everything around these big, big events. And there was just such a conviction that we were back and that we were sorry and that we were investing in developers again. And the one thing that I've learned within the developer community and outside, I just gave a talk for creators and you see the platforms really changing their, and developers are creators. I really do believe that as well. You see platforms changing their algorithms and their strategies all the time. Is that a relationship that a developer will have with a platform and a company has to benefit them. It can't be all about trust because companies will always move in the direction that supports their business. So, you know, we kind of maybe went a little too far and like we're all in on the community again. I believe it's because we believed it at the time, but, you know, a lot of us left and saw that the product was being sold. And, you know, like there's sometimes there was a naivety around like, okay, that's the old days and now we're going to be different. And then, you know, it doesn't, maybe it doesn't launch the way it's supposed to, or maybe it doesn't grow the way it's supposed to. Or if platform and DevRel is kind of a side afterthought, like, yeah, we know that we should do it, but there's really no, there's no proof that it's going to be helping or measurable goals around how it's going to help the business. It can often be dropped. And so, you know, I always advise marketers that are going into DevRel, which is a really unique and challenging role at times, because you might find yourself not on a marketing team, but on a product team, and you don't want to end up being considered service versus a strategist, which can happen quite often if you're not technical enough. Always advise them when they're thinking about going into DevRel jobs is make sure it's core to the business. Like, you know, it's very easy to become an afterthought if you are not being considered like a core piece of the business. So usually in marketing, I'm like, it should be the marketing for the company. Like if it's just a side piece, make sure it's a really big side piece. And that was a perspective I just had to learn when I saw it go up, like it was all about it, and then fall to the ground again.
So it sounds like maybe the message for marketers of developer products is to really zero in and make sure that there's something there for the developers. It's not just the at the whim of the company, right? That there's, I just looked up, I'd forgotten what he called it, but Jeff Lawson from Twilio, and this is now 8 years ago, wrote your strategy's last message to developers. And it was kind of about that, that idea that it can't just be this one-time thing. There's gotta be, it's gotta be something there for both parties, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it has to serve both parties in a way that benefits them both, right? So we talked about like just like getting the hobbyists to come play, but not actually having a benefit for them, except for like learning cool new things. They're just not going to be that sticky. But yeah, I mean, that's why those companies make sense, like Twilio or, you know, go work in marketing for GitHub, like those types of companies, you know, that the longevity of your own work and career, like serve the purpose of the company and the developers that you bring on, because they're just a core customer versus like a tangential customer. And, you know, at the same time, like Fabric, I think we, you know, I mean, Fabric was an amazing product. It did sell. But in the end, it kind of, I believe, got kind of broken apart. And it was still like the real product was that they were interested in was Crushlytics, you know. So we built kingdoms and seen them get taken apart a few times. But that's not just independent of, you know, developers and DevRel. It can happen in with lots of companies.
What are the frameworks or the tools, not necessarily software tools, but kind of thought tools that you've been using throughout your career that you would recommend to someone relatively new to marketing who's about to go into either a DevRel team or a developer marketing team to be a developer marketer?
Specifically to a developer marketing career, invest in the product marketing aspect of it. So I think when you go into a new role, especially in that space where you're the marketer and sometimes don't have an equal seat at the table, understanding your product mechanics and go-to-market and product positioning helps quite a bit. So I wouldn't go in there with just the generic playbook of marketing. I would go in there from the perspective of product marketing and product market fit, because that's something unique you can bring to the table. It establishes you as part of the PM team, and bringing your product to market in a viable way supports your entire business. So I always invest quite heavily in product marketing and understand those are, you know, the topics we talked about, like understanding your personas, behavior, pricing, positioning, all those things fall under the umbrella of product marketing. I think a lot of teams will bring in marketing for dev events, and I love events. Like, don't get me wrong, it's kind of my love language in marketing. But if you don't understand the product positioning features and the way that you'll bring it to market first, you will be considered just a service arm of the business versus a strategic partner. So I want all marketers to be respected in teams and to bring value to the teams. And I would say lean into the product marketing function, especially in the developer ecosystem space. Often something that I fight for quite a bit for my team is to have a seat at the table. But if you're in marketing and you come into not a marketing org, but a DevRel org, it's a little bit harder, right? So a marketing org will have different functions. Everyone's a marketer and the leaders of each of those functions have a seat at the table, but their executive is quite often a CMO or CEO. In the DevRel org, it's like engineers, advocates, marketing, PMs, data scientists, and quite often because your peers don't understand your work or maybe don't consider it equal to theirs, you often will not have that seat in a voice at the table when they're making decisions on the product. And so understanding the product, you don't have to be the developer in the room, but understanding both the product, but also the customer, like our role as marketers is really understanding customer needs and what's going to resonate with customers. And really like arming yourself with that data will give you more respect within your organization to make recommendations, right? So if you understand your customer needs and your audience, you can make recommendations on launches, you make recommendations on your like digital strategy, all of those things versus being told what to do. So, or being an afterthought.
Where can people find you online?
I'm still on Twitter X. You can always find me there, but there's so many. I was on Blue Sky and now I can't log in right now, so I have to figure that out. I'm on LinkedIn, and I'll probably start being more active on Threads because a lot of my communities have left. I'm still on Twitter, but a lot of my older communities have left them. So.
And then you're taking a professional break right now.
I mean, I thought I was, okay. But I left the company in September, and yes, it's been very nice, but I've been doing some consulting and speaking engagements, actually.
You probably don't know whether you're looking to to go full time again, or even if that would be a developer audience. But maybe you could, in closing here, give some advice to someone who is looking to have their first role in developer marketing.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's an amazing space to go in, and I still am a huge advocate for people going into developer marketing. And the reason is, one, it's an incredible community, so it's a really fun, and then you're like, you know, you're surrounded by builders, and I think that it's still an audience that is in equilibrium. Like, I just love that, like, anyone could change their life or career becoming a developer. Like, that's just like one of my passions, you know, is that, like, I remember being in, like, you know, cars, traveling. I mean, like, you should become a developer. Like, I would say that because I really believe that it could change people's lives and build careers for anyone, right? You didn't have to come from like an Ivy League school to become a developer. So I think it's an amazing space for someone to go into it. I would recommend that, you know, it's an open door. They could start going to meetups and meeting people, start understanding this space more. Like, you don't have to do like traditional prep to go into developer marketing. I think you'd have to have like an appetite for community and understanding community marketing quite a bit, because I think that there's just an overlap there. And then I would just start joining, you know, like join the opportunities that are in front of you. Like, go to the free days at the Salesforce Trailblazer if you wanted to get into the enterprise space. Host your own meetup, like, connect with some advocates and start talking to them on how you could get into this space, start contributing. Like, there's just so many ways versus just like applying for jobs on LinkedIn. Like, the more you can dive in and build around the community that's already exists, and ideally in a product that you're passionate about, right? So it was very easy for me to go into developer marketing at Twitter because I was a super user of the product and I love the product. And so if there's also a product you love and they have like, you know, like, or even like a product space you love, maybe you won't get that product, but a space you love and there's developer marketing roles in that space, it's just like you're always a more appealing candidate if you love the products. It's just easier for them to see, like, hey, this person may not know everything about what we're doing, but they're going to give it their all and they're going to be super passionate about it because they're a super user themselves.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah. Thanks, Katie.
Yeah. So nice to meet you both.